No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Here in Washington, the federal government is back and open for business after being shut down for 16 days. In addition, an agreement has been reached to raise the debt ceiling and keep the country from default. We are fortunate to have with us today a very special guest to discuss these issues and help us try to understand how we have become so divided and how we might resolve the stalemate that has seemingly paralyzed our government. Maria Sanchez is a respected broadcaster with her own show and a long distinguished career in radio and TV. She is a mom, a community activist, and she is a Republican, which is important because I am a Democrat, and if we are ever going to resolve our differences, we need Democrats and Republicans to come together in civil discourse to discuss solutions, and that's what our show is about today. Before we introduce her, let me say hello to my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen, and as always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hi, Senator Brown. Hello, everyone. I'm Kathleen Gomez, and welcome to Shadow Politics. Hello, Senora Sanchez. ¿Cómo estás? Buen día.
Bien. ¿Y usted?
Muy bien. Gracias. You know, we're honored to have you with us, and we're really trying to get the discussion where we try to bring America back together with Republicans and Democrats, get this down, have a meal, discuss the issues, and agree to disagree, but also to respect each other. And so, you know, as the senator mentioned, you are a longtime activist, broadcaster, and first vice president of the California Federation of Republican Women. You know, what's your take on what's going on in Washington lately?
Well, first of all, Senator Brown and Kathleen, thank you so much for the honor and the privilege to participate in a discussion that needs to be had on so many levels throughout our country. So my hat's off to both of you that you're actually engaging in this sort of forum, because I not only find it refreshing, but it's inspirational, and I think it portends that there's hope for our future. So thank you for allowing this to unfold, and again for the invitation to be with you. I believe that what we've just experienced this past month has created mostly losers, hardly any winners. And it's hurt us not only on a personal level, but on a national level, and probably more importantly, on an international level. And for that, I'm really sorry. The partisanship and the bickering and the egos seem to indicate that we have more politicians instead of leaders. And that's one of the takeaways that I have from what I witnessed this month, as we all did, is that we need to rethink when we go to the polls whom we vote for, because I don't think who we've got representing us now is doing us any favors, and I frankly don't believe that they do represent us, but it's who has won. And so that's probably the biggest lesson in this for me, is that we might want to have people represent us who actually look like us, who maybe have had a failed relationship, who maybe have gotten into trouble with their business and overextended themselves, and who maybe have experienced firsthand what it takes to run something so that then they can run our government. Because right now, I don't think that's what's been happening.
And well, just to follow up, I'm sorry, Michael, just to follow up.
No, go ahead.
We've always talked about the fact that, you know, we people people, we get very agitated when people say, you know, I don't want to vote. I don't want to spend the time at the poll. What if my vote doesn't matter? And it matters so much. And we have talked about this several times, how almost any other place in the world, they do die to have the right to vote, to have the right to choose their leaders. And America has become so lazy, I hate to say it, but that's the way I feel, that they just don't want to be bothered. And I think they need to wake up, because this is what happens when you're not bothered and you don't get involved.
Well, yeah, we certainly have seen that this week in Washington. A lot of the feedback that I've gotten, Maria, has been that people just don't, they're just disappointed, as you say, there are no winners. They're disappointed with both sides. They're like, why can't these people just sit down and work out their differences? And I think you're right. I think there have been no winners in the shutdown. And I think that the American people have suffered from this, not only from a loss of services, but also from the fact that now we have to pay a lot of federal workers who have been furloughed for 10 days. So we've lost all that productivity in addition to the loss of services. And by the way, I don't mean to digress here, but before I go any further, because Washington, D.C. shuts down with the federal government, I'd like to send out greetings and thank you to Illinois Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who became the 55th co-sponsor of our bill on the Hill to make the citizens of the District of Columbia equal through statehood. But it was a real problem here in Washington, because we're part of the federal government basically for budgetary purposes. So the city was about to shut down, and people here are furious at this. And you know, I wanted this to originally to be a discussion about the what had actually happened in Washington with the shutdown. But I think it's more important for us to discuss, especially since we have somebody like you that's got so much experience and is on the opposite coast and is probably coming from a different perspective because of that, and also because you're a Republican. I think we need to talk a little bit about how we've become so far apart. How have we become – you got any ideas on that? Because it seems to me that at one time there was a thing called being an American that we all agreed on, and there's less and less of that going on and more of us becoming polarized around single issues.
Well, my take on that is kind of piggybacking onto what Kathleen said about the apathy amongst the voters. So – one of my personal adages is one voice, one vote, one paycheck. What we do, what we say, how we spend our money does matter. We're not just a little, you know, snowflake in an avalanche. We are a person that makes a difference. So if people would realize that, I believe that they would be more emboldened to participate in the process. As it is now, because the primaries tend to attract the fringes on both sides of the party, you get folks who are more to the left and more to the right than I believe the general public actually is. Then when those are your choices on election day, people go, oh, I can't relate to that. That maybe in my party, but that's not what I think. That's not how I feel. So that creates more of the apathy, because they don't see anybody that really looks like them. And I'm not talking gender or race. I'm talking about philosophies.
Right. Well, you know, I think we see that right now. We're seeing that here. If you lived in Washington, D.C., you can't turn on a television without seeing a commercial for the Virginia governor's race. And I mean, even the political pundits have gotten together. The Democratic candidate is somebody that Kathleen and I worked with for years. We know him well. But what it's come down to in Virginia is it seems that you've got two people that nobody seems to like, and they're, you know, it's kind of a situation that we seem to get into a lot, which is choosing the lesser of two evils.
Right.
And the Democratic candidate has all sorts of baggage, and so does the Republican candidate. And, you know, how do we get better people in the primaries? I can't imagine that you could have gone through the election that involved Al Gore and George Bush and not understand that your vote counts. You know, when
exactly.
it comes, when it comes down to a handful of votes in Florida, you know, how can you not understand that that your vote can make a difference? I just don't know. But a lot of people still seem to cling onto that.
Speaking of getting better candidates, I think one of the great examples from my party is Colin Powell. I think mm-hmm. he would make a great yes. elected leader. But he doesn't want to go through the quagmire that's the process of getting to the ballot.
Right. Well, it's an elected official, I can tell you. Yeah, that's it's a terrible process. I mean, they say things about your children. They say things about, you know, how you were. Which one of us wants to be judged at how we were when we were 19 or 20 years old? And I mean, in the internet and our access to information has just made all that worse. Another guy that I happen to love on the Republican side is I'm originally from New Jersey, and I think Chris Christie is another guy that seems to appeal to a lot of people.
Yes.
And Colin Powell, I can't imagine that there's someone with more integrity and better credentials than Colin Powell. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe he's got too much integrity to be a politician.
Present company accepted.
Well, I don't know about that. Kathleen might argue that point with you. But, you know, and sometimes people with integrity don't make great politicians. You know, Kathleen and I met working for Jimmy Carter, who was a man of great integrity, but he wasn't a particularly good president, unfortunately. But I think you're right. I think we need to figure out a way to attract people that care more about what they are than who they are. You know,
well, and then, of course, that's also taking the ego out of the equation, because I think a lot of people, and again, of course, Michael, not speaking about you, but a lot of this is about power grabbing.
Absolutely.
And that's got to have a big ego behind that. And so if you're really for the masses and not for yourself, that means that you're self-deprecating, you're self-effacing, you don't need to be in the limelight, et cetera. And maybe you're right. It's mutually exclusive from somebody who needs to perform on a certain level to even be a candidate.
So does this explain why you're not running for Congress?
It's
you know, first of all, you got great, let me just say, you got great name recognition. We already have two congresswomen from California named Sanchez.
Correct.
And you got great credentials too. I got to tell you that I looked at your bio, and because, you know, I think that one of the problems is that we need to seek out our commonality and build on that. And so I took a look at you, and I wanted to see, what do I have in common with this woman? And I found just an amazing a plethora of things, from the fact that you're a mom, you're a parent, I'm a parent, you're a political activist and organizer, so am I. You're first vice president of the California Federation of Republican Women. I'm an elected Democratic committee man in D.C. as well as being the senator, which is the same kind of position. You know, it's the local Democratic committee, and you were the grand marshal of the 2013 Heels and Wheels thing out in California, and I ride a Harley. So we got a lot in common, and I think that's part of our problem, is that we don't see what we have in common. The right wing and the left wing only sees the differences. They don't see the commonality.
I believe that was such a beautiful way to say something, that if, of course, we're going to have differences. I even say that in my family. I have four children, and three of them are my sons. And so when they have a disagreement, I say to them, can you imagine why it's not a problem outside a household when you came from the same genetic pool, you're the same gender, you had the same experiences growing up, and yet you have differences of opinions? So
right.
Take that, you know, into the world. Well, it's, of course we disagree, but it's how we disagree. And why do we disagree? And are we really that, you know, digging down into the details instead of lifting our heads up and looking at the big picture?
Well, you know, and it's funny that you say that.
Senator Brown, it's my time.
All right, but hold on. I just got to make this one point, Kathleen. I know you're chomping at the bit, but I always, it's funny that you brought up your children, because I always think, I have a brother who's president of a college in Ohio, and he's the person that I respect most in life, and he's a Republican. So I think of that. Every time I think of Republicans, I think this great man who I love and I respect is a Republican. So there's got to be good things about Republicans.
Well, and then that said, your godson is also a Republican. My son is a staunch, I think, a libertarian, leaning toward a libertarian, but he's in the college Republican committee. And, I mean, I grew up a Democrat, you know. My grandfather was like the Mexican patron of the community. And I grew up with John F. Kennedy, you know, because you're John F. Kennedy, Jesus, and I'm trying to think who was the other guy. But, you know, that's the way I grew up, and my sons are both very much more conservative than I am. But talking about that, my question to you, Maria, is that, you know, I feel the biggest problem we have is that there are no moderates left on either side, or at least no moderates elected to the Senate and to Congress. And so what's happened to them? I mean, when I worked on the Hill, boy, we had a lot of moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats, and it was always... It was never an issue of you know, a problem being Republican or Democrat. It's just we knew that we could come together and they would sign our bills and we would sign on to them. Is that a part of the party on both sides? Do you think that it's extinct? Or how do we get moderates back?
Well, I'll tell you, back to the senator's question to me, I am very liberal socially and very prudent fiscally. And so I say I'm on the left side of the party. My left foot is outside the tent, and I'm pulling the umbrella over us to include people like myself, because I'll tell you, some of my colleagues are like, how can you call yourself a Republican? You don't believe in this, that, and the other. It's just the same way that I practice my faith. I'm a Roman Catholic. I also believe priests should be married, and I believe women should be priests, and I believe homosexuals should be priests if that's what they want. So my children say to me, well, then how can you call yourself a Roman Catholic? That's not what the Roman Catholic Church espouses. So it is interesting that it seems that what polarizes us is what defines us, rather than what the senator was saying is, what do we have in common? Because the human experience suggests that we have a lot in common.
Yeah, and you know, we've first of all, let me just point out that Kathleen's sons are Republicans because they know it annoys the hell out of Kathleen. It's more a matter of teenagers trying to annoy their mother than it is actually any strong political feelings. That's my opinion. But you know, we had it's really crazy the way things have gotten, because in Washington D.C. locally is the most Democratic place on the planet. We have we have 13 elected councilmen. All of them are Democrats. You know, our mayor's a Democrat. We've never voted for a Republican for president. But we had a Republican named Carol Schwartz, who was a councilwoman for many years and loved by both sides. And she was like you. She was liberal socially and very conservative fiscally, and people loved her. But she did one thing that the local Republican Party didn't like, so they got rid of her. They got rid of her in the primary. They brought in a guy that didn't have a chance of winning in the general election, and he beat her in the primary because it was easy to do. There are not very many Republicans in Washington, so they were able to manipulate things enough to get her out. And I think they're very sorry that they did that, because now instead of having 12 Democrats and a Republican, we have 13 Democrats. But you know, and 10 years ago, like Kathleen was saying, or 20 years ago when she was up on the Hill, I don't think you would have had that. They would have accepted her being a little outside the box, and which they always did. She was reelected many times. Go ahead, Kathleen.
I'm sorry, but go ahead. You know, I worked for Schroeder, who was like you, Maria. She was considered, I think the National Taxpayers Union gave her an 88% voting rate as far as, you know, socially conservative, but she was I mean, fiscally conservative, but she was a social progressive. So we need people like you to actually run, because it's like, you know, I told Michael, some of my best friends were diehard Republicans. I was up on the Hill, but we had music in common. We liked to go and hear kind of underground music. And so that's where we would go. We'd have dinner and break bread and then go back and disagree. But we were friends at the end of the day. And that's, I think, one of the things that is truly missing.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's so ridiculous, because I think that if you don't engage in the entire conversation, and if you only participate in the partisan politics and listen to what people say that you already know and believe, then you're ill-informed. You're actually ignorant, because you're like sticking your head in the sand. I don't want to hear what they have to say because I don't agree with it. Well, how do you know until you hear what they have to say?
Well, and that makes it easier for the media, too, to put a 20-second spot on TV that captures your interest, and then you think you know what's going on. When you really don't know what you need to know about the candidates, you really haven't looked into it, but they put something on, you know, that says this person is that way or this person is another way. And of course, with independent expenditures now, it's gotten even worse.
Right. But well, Kathleen, your point about the moderates, unfortunately, it seems that the folks that fund the elections, i.e. the deep pockets or the PACs, are the ones that also are the most marginal in terms of how strident they are. So that if you get a candidate that is reasonable, that is moderate, that is willing to go to the other side of the aisle, if the situation subject legislation warrants it, who's going to support them?
Yeah. Well,
the public has to get involved and say, you know, we seem to be just enraged on one issue. You know, everyone gets, and it's all based on, like, one issue. You recall somebody because you didn't like the vote on this one issue. You don't look at the whole package. And it's really sad, like, to see Olympia Snow leave. I mean, she was great, yes. You know. Was in the news a lot, but, man, did she accomplish a lot. And, like, I think of Colin Powell as somebody who is a moderate, and I'm trying to think of some other ones, but, you know, Patrick.
Well, growing up, Barry Goldwater from Arizona was another guy who, you know, he was, you know, not only, I wouldn't call him a moderate, but he was also consistent. You know, Barry Goldwater on day one and the day he left, he didn't change because of the opinion polls.
Right. That's the other thing, is the polling that we are so enmeshed with. It's really too bad, because then you keep waffling because the numbers show that this, I need to do that. And it's like, no, I firmly believe that if you give people what they want, I believe we are forgiving as a human nature, that sometimes you might disagree, but it's not sometimes, it's what is the majority of the time or most of the time. Who are they? Do they walk the walk? Are they congruent? Do they talk the talk? Does their actions and their behavior follow their words? Those are things that I pay attention to when I choose to whom I will surround myself with in my life, and that's who I'd like to be able to have as a representative.
Well, and you know, we've come full circle here in what you're talking about, Maria. This is exactly your first point, which is we lack leadership. You know, leaders don't read the polls and make up their minds on which way to act. Leaders go out and lead. They lead public opinion. They don't follow it.
Right.
And there really is a dearth of leadership, I think, in America. You know, I look at one of the people that I respected in politics, John F. Kennedy, and I say, this is a man that went out and said, you know, challenged America to do things and took bold action. And I just don't see that anymore in any of our politicians, I'm sorry to say.
But here's the because I try and find the good news as much as possible. And so sometimes the stories that we cover might not be lighthearted or, you know, inspiring or whatever. But I think that if in 200 short years we became the superpower of the world and the caretaker of humanity and et cetera, that is inherent in our DNA as United States Americans can still be there. It has to be. They can't have bred that out of us genetically. So what it is we've got to, Kathleen, which to your point earlier was, we've got to get better candidates so that we can have be making better choices so that then we can have better leadership.
Yeah, I agree, but, and I think Kathleen and I do. Go, Kathleen.
I just, you know, I recently my father, I lived in New York for 20 years, New York City, and I came back to a small town on the Mexican border where he ran for mayor. And let me tell you, it's become very difficult to get people to run because it is like a lynch mob. I mean, I've never seen 4 years of just literal hell. I mean, he went through 3 recalls just because the losing side didn't want him to win, so they kept on thinking they could recall him. It took so much of his time, so much expense. And, you know, we as Americans have got to kind of grow up and take responsibility because, really, the people we put in Washington and there are local city councils are a reflection of who we've become and the fact that we don't get involved and that we're, you know, too lazy. We like to stay and play our games or we like to be in our living room with our beer and, you know, couch potatoes. This is what's happened from that kind of behavior. And so we've been talking almost on every show, trying to tell Americans that, preach to them and say, hey, this is really the time when you need to really get up off of your seat and get involved, whether it's your school board, your PTA, the city council, because, my gosh, the city council is amazing how much they spend of your money. And they decide, and it impacts you. So, I mean, do you have anything that you say, or, I mean, is there some kind of a template you use out in California to get people inspired to get up off of the seat and run for something or get involved, Maria?
Well, the good news is that I live in Southern California, in Los Angeles specifically. There is a fair amount of people who are willing to step forward on the local level. Unfortunately, it's very expensive out here to do that. So, again, we're predisposed to either people who have their own deep pockets or who are in bed with others that do. So it is problematic. And then, of course, I'm in a blue state, so it makes it even more problematic in that regard because nobody bothers with us in general nationally because they know that we're an ATM for the Democrats. And so we can't even get people to come and, you know, campaign here because it's like it's a waste of money and it's a waste of their time.
Wow.
Well, we have the same thing in the District of Columbia. When you win the Democratic primary in the District of Columbia, if you're running for mayor and you win the Democratic primary, they ask you who your cabinet's going to be. They don't even wait till the general election to determine that you're going to win because Republicans never win. I mean, as a Democrat, for me, it's fun. Kathleen will tell you. Kathleen came out and worked on a couple of my elections. And on election day, what we do is we get a bunch of donuts and we go around to all the polling places and we feed volunteers donuts because we really don't have to campaign once you've won the Democratic primary. And as much fun as that is for me, you're right. It doesn't bode well for the system because we have an adversarial system of government and the world, you know, Kathleen and I think agree on this, that we would be no better off having a Congress that was all Republican than if it was all Democrat. We wouldn't be any better off having all Democrats. We need each other.
I agree.
You know?
Well, and that's what the beauty of our system is, you know, it's like having a mutt versus having a purebred. The AKC pups have their issues because it's been bred into them. In fact, like collies now, they're breeding the snout so that it's so narrow that it's impacting the space in the skull for the size of the brain. So the brain is getting smaller. The dogs are getting dumber.
Well, that's exactly what's happening with politicians. I think you finally hit the nail on the head. We're breeding them so the snouts are getting smaller and their brains are getting smaller. I'm absolutely convinced now that you said that that's our biggest problem. We're going to take a couple-minute break here to regroup, and we're going to play a song from 1968. It's an oldie but a goodie, but I think it says it all. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
I think it's so groovy now that people are finally getting together.
Hi, we're back. Call us and ask us a question or Skype us. You can call us at 888-429-5471 or you can Skype us at BBS Radio. That's like Bob Sam Radio 2. We'd like to hear from you and we'd like to know what you think, because I already know what Kathleen thinks.
Well, so, we know that Michael likes to talk a lot. So let me ask one question as we enter the second part of our show. Do you mind, Senator Brown?
No, not at all. Please.
Okay. Maria, you know, I feel strongly that the White House should get an F as far as in the public relations department, and that they should have been going door to door explaining the new Obamacare, okay? And I know this is a big sticking point for the Tea Party, is that the government, federal government, has gotten involved into the healthcare system. But, you know, one thing they don't talk about is it wasn't working before Obamacare. In fact, you know, for me as a single mom who's on her own and I'm trying to develop my own business, it was too cost prohibitive for me to get any kind of insurance. I have some little hope, although I don't understand Obamacare, what it really means and why everyone's scared. But let me ask you, if it wasn't for the federal government, who do you think would actually have gone in and say, okay, our health care system isn't working, we need to reform? If it's not the federal government, then who?
Well, I believe that about 58% of us have insurance provided through employers. And then there's another 20 or so that get it from Medicare, Medi-Cal, I guess. So yeah, we're talking about the exception. And by the way, Kathleen, I've been a single mom also, so I know your pain. And I was on a COBRA plan that was ridiculously expensive and finally bought my own plan, which is Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is still expensive. But what I've seen that's happened just in this month, and I'll give you an example with my folks who have Medi-Cal, Medicare, and they also have supplemental insurance for my dad's career, is that a prescription, and I was just there with them this week because my father's dying, and a prescription that I filled for her went from $15 to $30 to $100, and now it's $325.
My gosh.
Yeah.
That's in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so that's the kind of stuff that I'm allergic to bees, so I have an EpiPen, and mine expired. It used to cost me $30. It's now costing me $300.
Ugh. Holy cow.
So I don't know who it's saving, Kathleen, honestly. And I would love to have the conversation that I do care for the less advantaged and the indigent and I don't want to say poor, but people who don't have what others of us do have. And, you know, it varies in degrees, but I don't know if this is the solution. I was at an event today. I'm a proud member of Rotary International, and we had a street fair. And California has an exchange. It's called Covered California. So when you go on to healthcare.gov, if you enter in your zip code, this is for all of your listeners throughout the country, it will either send you to the affordable healthcare site if your state doesn't have exchange, or right to the portal through to your state's exchange. So I asked the women that are representing Covered California, how's it going? There's still huge problems. People can't register yet. I have a girlfriend in my Rotary who's an agent, and her website for Covered California keeps crashing. So we do have
to go
through the enrollment period.
That is a huge problem.
Well, let me ask you, this leads to a question that I'm interested in, Maria, and that is that you said that you're, you know, you are interested in providing services for the poor and people that don't have coverage. And I think this is a misconception that Democrats have about Republicans, that they really don't give a damn about the poor and they really don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. I'd like to ask you, what do you think is the biggest misconception that liberals have, liberal Democrats have about Republicans?
Probably that they're all affluent, they're mostly white, they're mostly male, and they are self-concerned.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think that is a common misconception. We have a caller, Pete from Maryland. Pete, are you there?
I am, Senator.
How are you?
Good. I just want to call in and you all were talking earlier with Maria about you know, making sometimes maybe a political vote, and I voted Connie Morella against her, and I wish I hadn't. And we
yeah,
need more
Connie was a Republican, a very well liked Republican.
She was, and a great lady, and I'm sorry I did that, and we need more moderates in the Congress and the Senate.
Well, thanks for that comment, Pete. I think you're absolutely right, and it was very much my recollection of the Connie Morella thing was it was very much like what happened to Carol Schwartz in Washington. Well, actually, it was the opposite, that Democrats wrote to all the Democrats in Montgomery County where she was a congresswoman and said, hey, man, you got a Republican. We need to get her out. And we need to get her out on the basis that she's a Republican. Not that she's doing anything wrong. Not that she doesn't have a good record. Just on the fact that we need to get her out because she's a Republican. Isn't that how it worked, Pete?
Yeah, it did. And I don't want to, you got a lot of good things going on in today's show, Mike, and I don't want to get in the way of that. And I just want to say I love your show and love Kathleen, and I like Maria a lot, too. She sounds great.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work, Senator.
Well, you're going to have to move to California so you can vote for Maria, because that's really that's the underlying scheme here that Kathleen and I got going.
I got plenty of friends in California. I'll apply some pressure on those folks.
All right, good, because we're going to get Maria elected.
Deal.
I think this is the beginning of her campaign, too.
Then we can run our Harleys together.
Yeah, I've done that. Thank you, Pete. By the way, just as an aside, the Heels and Wheels is all women, all rides for breast cancer and research. My mother has had breast cancer. She had her right breast removed 6 years ago. So I've done that about 3 years, and it is so inspirational to see all these gals from all walks of life riding any kind of bike, even though it's the Harley dealership that sponsors the event, and to be leading these women with an altruistic cause that affects women and men too, of course. It actually brings tears to my eyes every time as I take off. Tears are falling out of my eyes because of this altruism that I'm surrounded by. It's really something else.
Well, you know, now that you mention that, Maria, I have to tell you that I've been involved in the Komen Race for the Cure for 20 years here in Washington, and survivors wear pink T-shirts.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to the first Komen Race for the Cure, you could count the number of women in pink T-shirts on your hands and toes. And now there are literally thousands of them.
Yay.
So it really does my heart good when I go out there and I see that so much progress is being made, and that you know, we have so many more women survivors than we used to have.
I participated with the Komen one too, and I was walking with my then husband and my four children, participating in the walk. This was in Sacramento, and we fell behind three men wearing pink shirts, and the one shirt said, "I'm walking for my wife." The next shirt said, "I am walking for my daughter," and the final shirt said, "I am walking for my mother."
Yeah. Well, that's what I do. I wear one every year that on the front says I walk for my sister, Patricia, who died at 44 from breast cancer. And on the back, it says I walk for my mother, Louise, who died at 55. So it's an important cause to get out there. And you know, everything that you say, Maria, just makes me want to send you a campaign contribution more and more, because I have never been able to get my teenage children out there walking with me. My wife and I do it, you know, and then we usually come home and they roll out of bed at about noon and go, what's for breakfast? You know, so obviously you're a woman that knows how to get things done.
Well, I have to admit to you, they weren't teenagers yet when they did do the walk. So. I had much more control.
I wanted to ask that. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Kathleen.
Okay, I wanted to ask kind of another hard question. I guess the next 13 weeks, right, there's actually going to have to negotiate on a budget the way that we all learned it was supposed to happen, where you have a conference that's made up from the House and the Senate budget committees. And they're supposed to negotiate the budget, and if not, I guess we go into a shutdown. Do you think, Maria, they're going to be able to come to some kind of negotiation that can bring everyone together and we don't have to go through this? Because it's really bad, I think, business, bad policy to be running the government the way they are.
Well, I never thought, I was a guest on programs for the first 2 weeks of this month daily throughout the country, people asking me, hey, that crystal ball of yours, you know, look at it. I never thought it was going to get to the very end, never. I thought that everyone would step up and do the right thing. I was actually really disappointed that they didn't. So what I'd like to say optimistically, Kathleen, is that, yes, I hope that by December 13th, people have put their egos at the door, they roll up their sleeves, they behave like decent human beings, they have conversations that are conversational and not judgmental, and they get the business done, because we can't keep taking the hits as a people and as a nation. On Tuesday of this week, Fitch said it was maybe going to cut our credit rating. We did have the Chinese ratings agency, it's called Degong, lower their rating for us on Thursday of this week. Standard & Poor's still haven't brought their rating up from when they downgraded us in August of 2011. We can't afford this. It's impractical, it's improbable, and it's deleterious. So, Kathleen, I'm going to say to you, I hope and I pray, honestly, that they do the right thing, and so that we don't have to worry about January 15th and February 7th.
Okay, well, exactly. We have another call from Cole in Arizona. Cole, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You have a question for us?
I did. I had one more for Maria.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, my question is more, you know, the Republican Party is definitely kind of, I think, splitting into the two factions of, you have your kind of old gate conservative, you know, like generally religious fundamental types who are socially and fiscally conservative. And then you have the more libertarian-esque types who, you know, like I think, as you said yourself, were one who are fiscally conservative but socially more moderate up to almost socially liberal. And I kind of noticed that it seems like most politicians currently Republican tend to go and pander mainly to the more religious types, the fundamental types, so that way they get their vote and they also get the votes of the fiscal conservatives, because a majority of fiscal conservatives will still vote for the social conservative above someone such as Obama, who's both, you know, liberal socially and fiscally. So do you think that the problem is more internal with the Republican Party of how, you know, because, I mean, both sides are, but the Democrats seem slightly more united into one party. So do you think the issue with the Republican Party will be internal and has to be fixed internally, or is it just a kind of changing of the time?
Well, thank you for such an eloquent question, Cole. And what I do believe, personally, this is what I think would help solve and galvanize Republicans. Take the uterus out of the party platform. That's a moral decision. It has nothing to do with politics. When the Democrats did that with the death penalty, started winning elections. And I believe personally that it's murder, but I am not anybody who should be talking about a woman's body and her physician's decision and what they do. So if we would get that out of the platform, I would think that then we don't have that divisive nature that is the litmus test for, are you really a Republican? Because if you're not pro-life, then you can't call yourself a Republican.
Well, and you know that we had the same thing, Cole, to a certain extent. I mean, I agree with Maria. That's an important thing to get out of your platform because it really is a turning point for a lot of people. Women vote, and the Republican Party needs to understand that. You cannot win a national election without women. But we also had a similar situation. Kathleen and I could both speak to this in the Democratic Party when old liberals took over the Democratic Party, and we got candidates like Walter Mondale, and we got candidates like Dukakis, and we ultimately evolved somewhat, and we ended up with Bill Clinton, who, I've got to tell you, when he first ran, we thought he was conservative. That's what liberal Democrats called him. They called him a conservative. So my question to Maria is, do you think anything good is going to come out of this for the Republican Party? Will the Republican Party purge those Tea Party Republicans on the basis that they're losing support over some of the extreme kind of actions of those people?
I think that if they don't, then they're just sending everything down the river. I mean, if they don't get realistic about, and I'm not asking them to change them, the Republicans that are in control, to change who they are, but they had better change how they do business. It's not productive, and it's hurting everybody. And I'm saying that's not just the Republicans that participated, but I do believe the Republicans were responsible for the acrimony.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I got to tell you, when Bill Clinton first came in, he was part of a thing called the Democratic Leadership Council, which was a client of mine for many years. But when the Democratic Leadership Council started, we used to call them the Republican Democrats.
Because I remember that.
Because they were conservative. And one of the first things that Bill Clinton said he was going to do was reform welfare. And welfare was a liberal sacred cow. You know, we just said, oh, my God, you're going to have, you know, the whole country's going to fall apart because we're going to step all over poor people. And he reformed welfare, and it didn't happen, and he pushed our party more to the center and made it more popular. So, you know, now we remember him as a great savior. But when he started, boy, we didn't feel that way about him.
Well, that's the good news. It shows you that change is possible. And, of course, when you change, that creates change. So there's a synergy that goes on. And I say, like, the governor of New Mexico is a great example about how she's able to be Republican and be successful and be respected and be a great leader. Those are the kind of people I believe are the future of the Republican Party, if it's going to survive.
Well,
let me ask you something. Do you think there's any way we can get a third party?
I don't think so. I think Ross Perot was proof of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I really don't. I know people say that, but I maybe, I don't know, 50 years from now, but not in the near future.
Well,
I just don't see it. I do know the decline to state movement, though, is gaining momentum, which is an interesting statement.
Yes,
it is. Because they're the ones that are against any kind of federal government, right?
Well, they're really, what they want to say is they don't want to be constrained by a D or an R behind their name. And personally, one of our Los Angeles City Councilmen, who was a Republican, changed to DTS because he said it offended less people. So there's there's posturing going on with that. And then that might be more of an issue than a third party.
Well, and you know, third parties, that, you know, it sounds like an interesting idea, and maybe it'll help reform the two major parties. But I got to tell you, when I was in graduate school, I studied the Italian governmental system, which is similar to ours, except that they have a zillion parties, and it's the most loused up political system. I mean, the only thing you can say about it is it's really democratic because they let everybody run the country for like 6 months. And then that doesn't work, and another group goes in and they run the country for 6 months. So there's a lot to be said for the fact that the Democrats, when it works properly, and it hasn't been lately, but when the Democrat and Republican parties work properly, they kind of work to push people in their party, or supposedly push people in their own parties to a position which is acceptable for, you know, the majority of their party, and put together a platform that they can stand on, and so that we don't need to have, you know, 15 candidates who are all getting a minority piece of the vote, and then we have to try to come and put together a coalition government. Imagine trying to put a coalition. Imagine trying to put a coalition government together now on Capitol Hill. You'd never get anything done.
No. That would be really interesting to watch, but I don't think very productive.
No, I don't think so either. And I think that we have to just be tough with the two parties that we have right now, and hold their feet to the fire. And I hope, in reference to what Kathleen was saying about the process of the budgetary process, I hope people put pressure on their congressmen and senators, call 202-224-3121, ask for your congressman, and tell him you want him to compromise, that you want her to come up with a reasonable solution so that we don't end up in this mess again in 90 days.
And that goes back to our first point of our conversation this hour, is that by you, your listeners, making that move means something to the folks who are receiving the calls or the emails. You guys know that better than anybody.
Yeah.
The X amount represents X amount, and therefore,
Yes, and these guys, and it doesn't, you'd be surprised how many emails and calls it takes. It doesn't take a whole lot. Kathleen can tell you, she was up there. But before, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to give you a chance, Maria, to tell us about your show, because it sounds just wonderful, and I've listened to a few podcasts, and it is. You have the most interesting guests, and you do a great job. So I want you to pitch yourself for a minute or two. Tell us what you're doing and what's coming up on your show and how people can listen.
Senator Brown and Kathleen Gomez, first of all, thank you again for the honor and the privilege to be here. I have thoroughly enjoyed myself, and I think that this might be the beginning of intellectual discourse where it could be partisan, but it doesn't have to be political. So thank you two for what you're doing, because you are making a difference. And the Maria Sanchez Show is a real eclectic program. I try and get world events involved when necessary, and also national events, and then sometimes even local events. But the main point I'm trying to make with our broadcasts is that one person, one voice, one cause, one nonprofit, one inspirational statement does make a difference. It helps to heal our planet. It helps to make our world a better place to live. It helps open up our minds. And so I'm always looking for those kinds of stories. And then I have correspondents that visit with me depending on the topic and their field of expertise. I've got about 24 of them. One of my favorite ones that I like to talk about is my circumcision correspondent. He went to Harvard Law School with President Obama, and he started a nonprofit that has been working for the last 10 years about genital integrity. And I met him in my NPR days, and he talks about both men and women and not cutting. And he has opened my eyes up to what that means in this world, because when we hear about female genital mutilation, we think about the atrocities that are happening in Africa, and he compares it to circumcision in America. So those
I agree. My sons aren't circumcised. They're probably going to kill me now. But
thanks for that, Mom.
And mine are, Kathleen, and I don't like to live in regret at all, but I would make a different decision today based on what I've learned from Stephen Savoda, who's my circumcision correspondent.
Well, let me just tell you one last thing, Maria, and that is that you could make history here. I think that Kathleen and I are both would both commit to sending you a contribution for your congressional campaign, and you would be the first Republican that either one of us had ever given a dime to.
Yes, that's true.
You two are adorable.
I couldn't even get Kathleen to contribute to my campaign.
Except for
Well, but, really, it has been an honor and a privilege. I cannot thank you enough for the invitation. I have enjoyed myself thoroughly, and I'm so proud of what you two are doing on this level. It's very admirable and, again, inspirational.
Well, good. I hope you come back and join us again so Absolutely. We can continue the discussion because you've been a delightful guest.
And if your staff can get me this conversation, I'd love to post it on mariasanchezshow.com.
We'll make sure you get it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll
have a good
see you
evening
again
and
soon.
A great week.
Okay. You too, Maria. Thank you. Well, that's it for us tonight on Shadow Politics. Thanks for joining us. Kathleen, any last words?
I think that we have to just start a campaign for her and just get it going. And then she has to just run. Because
okay.
that's the kind that those, this woman is the type of woman we need in Congress in whatever form she wants to be, whether as a senator or a representative. And I say to the people in America, get involved, find out what your representative is doing, find out what your senator is doing, and get on the phone, because when I was on the Hill, for every call or email you got, that represented 10 other people that just didn't bother, but they were thinking the same way.
That's right. Call your representative and tell them you want to stop the nonsense in Washington, you want to stop the gridlock. We want to bring America back, and we can do it, America. Look at all the things we've done in the past 200 years. This should not be a big deal. So for Kathleen Gomez and Maria Sanchez and Senator Michael Brown, thank you. Have a great week, and we hope to hear you. We hope you'll hear us next week. Thanks.
Thanks, America.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.